This is Digital Story Podcast number 1006, July 1st, 2025. Today's theme is the enduring 20 megapixel sensor. I'm Derek Story. Olympus released their first 20 megapixel sensor back in 2016. Since then, their LiveMOS or stacked BSI LiveMOS sensors have been inside their Micro Four Thirds cameras. And even though Panasonic has a 25 megapixel version, OM System has stuck with theirs. Today, you'll discover why. All of this and more on this week's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. What I want to do this week is start out with an excellent interview on Digital Camera World. It is titled, OM System has used 20 megapixel sensors for years, but is a new high-res version coming? I sat down with OM execs to ask my biggest questions on sensor development. This is really terrific. So I'm going to read a little bit from this interview because it's chock full of information. And then I have some thoughts that I want to add as well. So let's dig in here and let's get the inside scoop from OM System themselves about their 20 megapixel sensor. And is it a forever sensor? Are we going to see something else? And why have we had it so long? All right, here we go. Let's see what this interview has to say. And again, I have the link to the interview in the show notes from Digital Camera World. Across its entire mirrorless line, every current OM System camera, from the budget-friendly to the flagship, has one thing in common, a 20-megapixel Micro Four Thirds sensor. But is OM System about to stretch beyond the 20-megapixel resolution the company has used since 2016? I sat down with four OM System executives at the B&H Build Expo, and chief among my list of questions was that 20-megapixel sensor. OM says it is continuously working on new sensor development. Quote, "The development and evolution of a new image sensor is an ongoing effort," said their head of business at OM System. The company couldn't share details about ongoing development other than that a new sensor development is ongoing. But they explained why the company has stuck with a similar resolution for nearly a decade. Quote, "At present, we believe that 20 megapixel sensor is the most suitable for OM System philosophy in our system optimization. In particular, our sensors feature high-speed readout, enabling computational photography and minimizing rolling distortion in electronic shutters. We place importance on the overall performance balance as something that cannot be measured by pixel count alone." OM System, formerly Olympus, has stuck with a 20-megapixel sensor on its mirrorless launches since 2016. While there are now two variants of that sensor, the original LiveMOS, found now on the OM5 Mark II, and the 20-megapixel stacked BSI LiveMOS sensor on the likes of the OM1 Mark II and the OM3, OM System hasn't strayed beyond the 20-megapixel range. Fitting more pixels on a Micro Four Thirds sensor tends to be more challenging than fitting more pixels on a larger full-frame one. Smaller sensors are quick to gain more noise at high ISO with higher resolutions, for example. High-resolution Micro Four Thirds sensors aren't impossible, however. Panasonic now offers a 25 megapixel on the Lumix GH6 and the Lumix G9 Mark II, while drone giant DJI even has a 100 megapixel Micro Four Thirds sensor on the Mavic 4 Pro. Still, higher resolutions tend to slow down a camera's performance, and OM System wants to position itself as the capable compact outdoor camera system, a strategy that I suspect is working. During a press event for the launch of the new OM System OM5 Mark II, the company said that more than 60% of OM5 users in North America were new to the brand. Quote, "We often heard 20 megapixels, not enough. But actually, our customer base is getting bigger and bigger and bigger," the executive director of U.S. sales and marketing for OM Systems said. So that's why I say some people are looking for that kind of camera. And what we need to do is we need to reach those people who are looking for that kind of camera. One of OM Systems' strategies for getting the most performance from a 20 megapixel Micro Four Thirds sensor is computational photography, including high-res shot mode. This creates an 80 megapixel shot by employing the camera's stabilization system to pixel shift the sensor and merge multiple images together in camera for a higher resolution shot. Impressively, this mode still captures 14-bit RAW files on the OM-1 Mark II. Quote, "While we believe the hardware improvements are important, we also consider advancements in computational photography and AI to be crucial for enhancing the users and shooting experience features such as Live ND, handheld high-res shot, and AI subject detection, AF, which provide shooting experiences that cannot be achieved by sensor performance alone," OM Systems says. The high-res shooting computational mode isn't workable for every type of shot. Motion distorts when the camera takes multiple photos to merge together, so it's an option best reserved for stationary subjects. The camera also needs more time both to take multiple shots and to save the larger file. That leads to another reason OM Systems has stuck with the same resolution for so long. It works, and the brand knows that it works. Quote, "Plateauing is something we can see throughout the whole industry," OM Systems head of business for Europe, Middle East, and Asia said. "If you look at the newest launches from other brands, there's not a lot of new technology going on. Everybody's kind of plateauing a little bit. We always want to bring something completely new when we can do it right away, and we know that the sensor is functioning very, very well. And before we can ensure that, we would rather stick to a concept that works and provides the best experience for our customers." Larger resolution sensors come with challenges. Too much detail can be unflattering for skin and portraits. High-resolution sensors need lenses with high resolving power, and they also need high-speed processors to go with them. For OM Systems, 20 megapixels is a sweet spot, just enough detail without overly large files and slow cameras. But as technology continues to advance and high-resolution screens become more commonplace, OM Systems will likely need to move beyond that 20-megapixel sensor. The company makes it clear that sensor development is ongoing. The biggest remaining question is, how long will it take to develop something completely new and do it the right way? I think this is a very informative piece on Digital Camera World. And again, the link to the article, the original article, is in the show notes. And I want to piggyback on some of the things that came up here. First of all, I have to say that just in my everyday life, I'm a working photographer as well as someone who does podcasts every now and then. I will say that 20 megapixels rarely presents a problem for me in that the resolution of those files is big enough for almost everything that I do. And when I do need more resolution, it's easy enough with all the great software that's available to upscale those shots to a higher resolution. So that reason, the 20 megapixels isn't a problem. Now, I would say that something that comes into play more is the actual sensor size, right? Then we're dealing with some real things that we all know about. It's harder to control depth of field. The low light performance isn't as good as with a full frame sensor. So we know about those things, but again, software and computational photography helps us work around them. What we get in return is a very portable camera with very portable lenses, and lenses that are quite good, I might add, very good. and a lot of computational stuff. And that's what I want to talk about here for a moment. We just finished our Creative Camera Techniques workshop. It ran for a month and I had a blast. And one of the nice things about doing workshops like that is that it gives me the opportunity to revisit some of the features. In our case, we were focusing mainly on OM system, Fujifilm, and Nikon cameras in the workshop. And it gave me a chance to revisit some of the features of those cameras. Features that I know about, features that I've used, but because I'm teaching a workshop, I have to dig even deeper into that feature set. One of the things that we talked about in the last week was high-res shot. High-res shot on my OM3 comes in two versions. There's the handheld version, and then there is the tripod version. I did some serious testing, again, because it was going to be part of a class, on using the handheld version. I took a picture of this is a small river that was running out to the ocean. It was a breezy day, so there were grasses. And then there was a cattle egret in the water there. And I said, this is great because I have things that are moving a little bit, and then I have a bird, and then I have things that aren't moving at all, you know, stationary objects in the scene. I used the OM3 in handheld high-res mode, and then I compared it to a raw file of the same scene shot just regularly, the regular 20 megapixel version. And I discovered some very interesting things looking closer. First of all, in the shot that I was doing, movement wasn't a problem. So it's not like there can't be any movement at all. There can be slight movement, there just can't be movement, like someone riding a bicycle movement. They can't be that kind of stuff. And in fact, in the high-res shot mode, the egret was sharper than in the raw file. And I was thinking, this is where the pixel shifting helps, right? Because, you know, it increases dynamic range a bit, but it also increases sharpness. And unless there's some noticeable movement, it's actually going to perform better. Now, remember, when the camera takes the shots, it happens really fast. It'll woo, like that, right? It's not that. It's not like that. It's woo. It's like, it feels like one motion. So it's not stretching it out over a long period of time. And I started thinking about, wow, I just haven't been utilizing high-res shot mode enough because I haven't really sat down and compared at 100% magnification on my computer shots that were taken in high-res shot mode versus shots that were taken just at regular 20 megapixels. And I'm going, look, I'm getting over 8,000 pixels on the longest side in high-res shot mode. This is fantastic. From this little camera that I'm just carrying around my shoulder, you know, not even thinking about the weight or anything. Computational photography and the ability for the camera to do that so well has a lot to do with the whole imaging pipeline, including the sensor. And I think this is why OM System doesn't want to move to a new sensor until they know that it's going to perform as well for high-res shot, for live ND, for subject detection, for all those things that it does. So during the course of this workshop, while we're testing all these different features, in-camera focus stacking. So not only will the camera record this distance, you know, let's say you're doing a flower and you want all parts of the flower in focus, handheld, focusing on the flower, letting it do its thing again. It does it very quickly. Not only does it give you all the frames, let's say that you had 12 frames for this focus stack, you know, with a setting of 2 for the interval. I mean, 2, and that's distance, not timing. The timing is really fast. Those 12 shots, because the camera is so sophisticated, can be also assembled, stacked, merged, whatever you want to call it, in the camera itself. Now, you can also take the individual shots, put them in something like Luminar Neo, have them stacked there as well. So you have your options. And I think this is one of the things that really jumped out at me when I was working with the OM3 in the Creative Camera Techniques class, is that I have so many options. I can take those individual frames, work on them in post. I can have the camera do the work for me. I can have it assemble the time lapse that I take. I can have it, you know, assemble the focus stack that I take. It will show me the live ND. It goes on and on and on. And I begin to understand why OM System wants to have a very stable, very fast, high performance imaging pipeline, enabling all these things to work. Now, what will be really exciting is when they do come up with a new sensor, when it finally, you know, checks all the boxes that they want, and let's say that it's 24 megapixels, something like that, then yes, then we do get a little bump, right, in our resolution. Hopefully, though, and of course, knowing OM System, they won't sacrifice any of the other features of the camera just to get us those 4 or 5 extra megapixels. I think OM System is right. People don't buy their cameras, you know, hoping that someday, you know, they're going to have these high resolution sensors inside the small camera. They know that, or they understand that, all the other things that you get with the camera, because everything is hooked together, right? You know, the leg bone's connected to the hip bone, you know, that kind of thing. And they understand that I want all these other features, and I'm willing to live with a 20 megapixel sensor to have everything else. I thought this interview did a good job of sort of highlighting that. So good a job that I thought it was worth revisiting. We haven't talked about this sort of thing for a while, but the combination of me coming off the Creative Camera Techniques workshop, where I really delve deep into all the cool things, the built-in 4-stop ND filter in my X100-5, Nikon's new subject detection stuff, Olympus's focus stacking that puts it together in camera. We were digging into all that good stuff, and it just made me appreciate what OM System's doing, what my other favorite camera brands are doing, and to maybe trust them a little bit on this 20 megapixel sensor thing, thinking that maybe they know what they're doing, and when it's time to give us something that has a little bit more resolution, they will happily do it. Okay, let's look at a little camera industry news. There's some good stuff going on. DP Review finished their review of the Fujifilm GFX 100 RF, their in-depth review, and they like it. They like it. There are definitely a few gotchas here, but the gotchas are not that crazy. And for those of you that might not remember what this camera is, it is basically a compact medium format camera. So I have the link to the review in the show notes. I'm going to go on down to the bottom here, which is, you know, what a lot of us do all the time anyway. We go down to the conclusion, and then maybe we work our way back up. So on the conclusion here, it may be tempting to see the GFX 100 RF as a supersized and superpower X106, a take-everywhere camera that's engaging to use and signals to others that you're someone who's into photography. And while it handily achieves that last point, it doesn't quite live up to the versatility of Fujifilm's smaller cameras. Every camera has its trade-offs, even pricey premium ones aimed at buyers who expect a lot. The GFX 100 RF is no different, but it is in the odd position of having two identities, an image quality monster with a massive sensor and a walk-around everyday camera that aims to be compact as possible. Fujifilm has clearly put a lot of work to balance those competing personas, but with each concession, it narrowed the envelope within which the camera can perform at its best. To be clear, in good light, the camera produces high-resolution images with incredible detail and tonal quality, the likes of which you simply couldn't get without a much larger kit. but in lower light scenes, the lack of optical or in-body stabilization in the 28mm equivalent f4 lens makes it harder to get the most out of the camera. And when you need to shoot at an odd angle, you may find yourself cursing the screen that only tilts up and down. Ironically, the decisions that make it so compelling to carry with you everywhere you go also makes it less well-suited for situations you may find yourself in when you get there. The GFX 100RF is not designed to be a purely practical tool the way many professional and prosumer cameras are. It's built to be played with, for you to take it everywhere and mess around with how you see the world through its viewfinder via the digital teleconverter and aspect ratio dial. Why else would those features get top billing with large, non-customizable controls? Ultimately, whether the camera is for you or not will depend on how obsessive you are about image quality and how much you appreciate the things that make the GFX 100RF special. Those concerned with maximum image quality in any situation and corner-to-corner sharpness, above all, may want to look elsewhere. But if you're willing to budge a bit on that, there's a lot to recommend. Provided, of course, that you can afford the asking price and appreciate the fields of view that its fixed lens provides. The limitations make it hard to award it a gold, but its combination of image quality, compactness, and user experience comfortably earns it a silver. So the things that they like: superb image quality, plenty of tactile controls, exceptionally compact for a medium format camera, relatively easy to carry around, built-in ND and included weather sealing filter make it more versatile, incredible battery life, autofocus works well for street and considered photos. What they don't like: no stabilization limits the extremely capable sensor, compact lens isn't the sharpest edge-to-edge that we've seen, familiar EVF gives an unremarkable experience, dedicated zoom and aspect ratio controls won't be useful if you want to max image quality. Stylish square lens hood adds substantial bulk. The entire review with all the details, and there's a ton of information here on this review, is on dpreview.com. I have a link to it in the show notes. But I felt like this was a very insightful review to an exciting camera, but a camera that has its pros and cons, and a camera that, quite honestly, isn't for everyone. But I think those it is for are really going to love it. OM System confirms that the OM5 Mark II isn't compatible with the best pack-in flash. And this is also on DP Review. They get two stories this week. This one really caught my eye and surprised me, I have to tell you. I have a link to it in the show notes. OM System's latest camera won't work with the FL-LM3, a flash loved by the company's users. There was some question about compatibility. Charts on OM System's website said it wouldn't work with the recently announced OM5 Mark II, but users wondered whether it was a mistake, since the flash was compatible with the OM5, a camera that physically is very similar to its successor. However, OM System has now confirmed the incompatibility to DP Review, saying, quote, "The decision to not support it was a result of comprehensive consideration on the product's characteristics." I have no idea what that means. I really don't. This will likely be a bit of a disappointment for longtime OM System and Olympus users. At DP Review, we consider the FL-LM3 as comfortably the best pack-in flashes. It can both tilt and swivel, giving you lots of flexibility when bouncing it. That would already set it apart from most included flashes, but it also remains useful even when you buy a bigger flash, as it can be used to trigger other OM System flashes that support its RC system, such as the FL700 and the FL900, both of which are compatible on the OM5 Mark II on their own. While the FL-LM3 hasn't come with OM System cameras for a while now, it's sad to see that the company's latest cameras are dropping support entirely for it, with little explanation as to why. But if you were considering whether or not to get an OM5 Mark II and are a big fan of the flash, at least the matter is settled now. I have, I think about three of these little flashes bouncing around, and I absolutely agree with DP Review here. It is the coolest little flash. It is so small. I mean, it fits anywhere, right? And it does swivel and it does tilt. It uses the battery from the camera system, right? So it doesn't have the bulk of having to have batteries inside. And it works really well. You know, if you put it on TTL flash, it's fantastic. I use it for fill flash all the time. And I always have one bouncing around in my bag somewhere. If you are considering the OM5 Mark II and you do use flash photography or you do have that little flash hanging around, just know now that you're going to have to come up with a different flash solution because it won't work with the new camera. Public Lens sell-off stripped from the Big Beautiful Bill in hard-fought win for conservation. This is an article on Petapixel, and I have a link in the show notes. U.S. Senator Mike Lee, a Republican in Utah, has announced that he is withdrawing his latest public lands sell-off plan from the Senate Budget Reconciliation Bill, one which would have mandated the sale of millions of acres of public land throughout the western United States. The original plan would have been a massive blow to outdoor enthusiasts, conservationists, and nature photographers. The decision follows widespread public outcry and bipartisan opposition, making a significant victory for conservationists, outdoor enthusiasts, and advocates of public land access. In a significant reversal, the U.S. Senate has removed the controversial provision from its sweeping federal budget reconciliation bill, H.R. 1, officially titled One Big Beautiful Bill Act, often referred to as the Big Beautiful Bill, that would have authorized the sale of federally managed public lands, many of them in ecologically and culturally significant areas in the American West. The decision comes amid mounting opposition from across the political spectrum, including members of both Republican and Democratic parties, as well as a wide array of stakeholders concerned about long-term access to public lands. The provision, which was tucked into earlier drafts of the bill, would have required the Bureau of Land Management to identify and sell off large tracts of public land, some of which bordered or overlapped with areas near national parks and protected wilderness in states like Utah, Nevada, Arizona, and New Mexico. While the exact parcels under consideration were not publicly itemized, environmental groups and local officials raised alarms that the plan could have affected land in or directly near Arches National Park, Grand Staircase National Monument, and Great Basin National Park, among others. These landscapes are widely regarded for their geological and ecological richness and are frequently visited by photographers, hikers, and nature enthusiasts drawn to their remote beauty. The now removed provision posed a risk not to just these adjacent lands, but to the visual corridors and wildlife migration paths that connect national parks to surrounding wilderness. Notably, the opposition was not confined to environmental groups or Democratic lawmakers. Several Western state Republicans expressed concern that the sale could undermine hunting, recreation, and tourist economies in their home states. Facing increasing scrutiny, public outcry, petitions, and a looming vote, Senate leadership confirmed late Monday that the land sale provision had been officially struck from the final version of the spending bill. Thank you. Boy, we needed some good news in this area because it was looking pretty concerning there for a while. I'm really happy that some bipartisan action happened here, and that's what needs to happen for these sort of things. We need people on both sides of the aisle to get together and, in my view on this bill, do the right thing, and I'm glad they did. Right, to get a little virtual camera club news, I want to start by thanking our Inner Circle and Inner Circle Bold members. These are the folks that support our podcast, our community, month in and month out. And then also reap some very nice benefits, such as discounts on all of our events, workshops online or in person, heads up on things that are coming down the pike before they're officially announced. And of course, they have their own space to hang out in, the Inner Circle space on Derek Story Online. If you're interested in joining this great group of artists, all you have to do is click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. You can sign up there, and the next thing you know, you'll be hearing from me. The goodies will start tumbling into your inbox. And a big thanks to our Inner Circle members for supporting this community. I also want to mention our friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the Digital Story. These are the folks that enable you to make fantastic artwork from the images that you capture and work so hard on in post-production. So you do all that work, right? You go to these places, you capture these beautiful pictures, you come home, you work on them on your computer, on your laptop, you have three or four or six that you just absolutely adore, that you worked very hard on. Why stop there, right? Why stop there? Why leave all that beautiful work trapped in your computer or trapped on your phone? Why not get it out into the world by printing it on some beautiful Red River paper and then display it, hang it on the wall, give it to friends, make fine art cards from it? There are many things that you can do to get your images, your artwork into the hands of people who will appreciate it. Red River Paper can help you do that with the knowledge they have on their site, with the recommendations they have for the type of photography that you're doing, and of course, with their great printing paper. To get started, click on the tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story, nose around a bit, get yourself some paper, and start making your artwork now. Set your images free with Red River Paper. And a big thanks to them for supporting this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show, working on more terrific stuff for next week. Until then, get out there, take some pictures, stay safe. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.